It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it's presently 53 degrees, and we're looking at this windy, rainy weather to go on for a while. We also have gale warnings all around the Gulf. Coming up on the Midday News, five candidates are competing for three seats on the Borough Assembly. They presented their cases at a candidate forum last night. Today's siren test may sound a little bit different. Our outlook for cruise ships in 2021. And killer whales have added yet another species to their diet, apparently. We have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 2:18 this afternoon, an 8.2 foot tide.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Donald Trump is facing backlash for refusing to condemn white supremacists during last night's chaotic presidential debate against former Vice President Joe Biden. When asked if he'd urge the extremist group, the Proud Boys, to remain peaceful over the outcome of the race, whether he wins or loses, Trump said they should stand by and stand back, and then blame leftists for violence at recent protests. Today, Trump denied knowing who the Proud Boys are.
I don't know who the Proud Boys are. I mean, you'll have to give me a definition because I really don't know who they are. I can only say they have to stand down, let law enforcement do their work. Law enforcement will do the work more and more. As people see how bad this radical liberal Democrat movement is and how weak, the law enforcement's going to come back stronger and stronger.
The Commission on Presidential Debate says it's now considering changes to the format after last night's debate was plagued by interruptions, mostly from the president. The group says it will announce specific changes soon. We have details from NPR's Sam Greenglass.
As the debate wore on, many voters, reporters, and pundits started asking, why wasn't more done to stop the chaos? Some wondered whether the next debate should take place at all. The commission says, quote, last night's debate made clear that additional structure should be added to the format. Campaigning in Ohio, Joe Biden says he'd like to see changes, but is planning to participate no matter what.
I just hope there's a way in which the debate commission can control the ability of us to answer the question without interruption.
Biden's suggestion, Trump's microphone should be cut when it's not his turn, and vice versa, ensuring each candidate 2 minutes of uninterrupted speaking time every time. Sam Greenglass, NPR News, Washington.
Trump's handling of the coronavirus pandemic was prominent during the debate, and one notable moment was when Trump was repeatedly asked about why he often appeared to refuse to wear a mask. Trump said, not so. He sort of attributed his actions, though, to Dr. Anthony Fauci, a member of his coronavirus task force. Today, the nation's leading infectious disease expert sharply countered.
Anybody who has been listening to me over the last several months know that a conversation does not go by where I do not strongly recommend that people wear masks.
Dr. Fauci speaking on ABC. Breonna Taylor's family will have to wait a couple more days to hear the recording of the grand jury proceedings related to Taylor's March death. Today, a judge has granted Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron's request for more time to redact private information, such as witnesses' phone numbers and addresses. The audio recording in question is 20 hours long. The judge is giving the state AG until Friday to prepare it for release to the public. Taylor's family criticized Cameron after none of the officers involved were directly charged with Taylor's killing. This is NPR News.
Last night, five candidates for three seats on the Borough Assembly presented their cases at a candidate forum sponsored by KMXT and the Kodiak Daily Mirror. KMXT's Jared Griffin has this recap.
Candidates answering questions at the forum were Alex Hartman, Jeff Smith, and Amy Williams, with incumbents Julie Kavanaugh and Rebecca Skinner. Joe Delgado and Sandra Katelnikoff-Lester were unable to attend, but did submit candidate statements. Candidates discussed their positions on many key issues facing the Kodiak Island borough, and first up was the proposal to investigate consolidation of the borough and city governments. All of the candidates declared their support for the work of the Consolidation Committee and hoped for a better working relationship with the city government. Assembly candidate Amy Williams.
The fact that the city withdrew its representative, I have a feeling that that's going to be temporary and that they'll come back to the table because they are such an important part of it. I think that process should absolutely continue. And I guess I reserve my right to say whether I'm pro or against consolidation to wait and find out what that committee finds out and have more numbers. I think everyone wants to see a more efficient government and something with less layers. But I also want to ensure that all of those same services are able to be provided by that one centralized government.
Much of the forum after that was devoted to the budget. When asked about their positions on Proposition 1, which, if approved, would allow the borough to tap the principal of the facilities fund to cover bond debt payments, most candidates agreed that using the fund should only come as a last resort. Assembly candidate Jeff Smith.
We've kicked this can for a long time, and now it's kind of like the rubber band is stretched as far as we can stretch a rubber band. And we've kind of waited until we're at this moment where we have to make a decision. How are we going to continue to fund and afford the services that we all enjoy? Are there other options out there for revenue? Absolutely. Have we looked at all of those options? Not necessarily.
Incumbent Rebecca Skinner, a co-sponsor of Proposition 1, explained her position on why having the facilities fund as an option is important.
Would I consider using the principal if this was approved by the voters? Of course, because it's an option. It's a tool on the table. Would that be my first choice? No, it would not. But we have to pay our debt. That's not an option. And if we don't have a way, or we don't have the time to raise revenue from other sources, we have to pay our debt.
This led to a discussion of the candidates' ideas about the Kodiak economy and bridging budget gaps. The candidates all supported a balance of exploring budget cuts, with some candidates declaring their unwillingness to raise property taxes. Incumbent Julie Kavanaugh argued for a stable tax rate.
I have been steadfast that our local residents need a stable tax rate to depend on, and that provides the ability for individuals and local businesses to remain invested in our economy. That being said, we have avoided a mill rate increase for multiple years, and I think that that's going to have to be looked at.
Much of the discussion, though, focused on increasing revenue and diversifying the local economy. Skinner and candidate Alex Hartman proposed looking at regulations and zoning codes.
Economic development and industry is, in my opinion, really focused on regulations and, from a borough perspective, land use regulation or zoning that helps encourage and support business development or business diversification.
To diversify is a very good way of creating more business opportunities for freeing up land around this town and to simplify the codes. It is sometimes very hard for people to start new businesses because of a simple code rule that's in the way.
Williams proposed investment in local industry, such as tourism and fisheries, and Kavanaugh suggested opening up land for industrial use and support for the business sector.
Expand our shipyard, our boatyard, stuff like that, having support from the borough as we try to reach out and get more business into those kind of things will help our ports and harbors in the future too.
Well, I know the state has been having a conversation about divesting land that they feel like it is no longer necessary for them to hold. And I think that the borough could look at acquiring some of those plots of land.
As the largest expenditure of the borough budget, support for local public education was another deeply discussed topic. Hartman and Smith consider borough support as an investment in the community.
Yes, I support education, and it's a big integrity of any society. If you have good education, you're going to have better people in society that are thinking better.
The children, the youth of this community are our future in this community. And how we support them today and how we invest in them today is what's going to pay dividends for the longevity of our community. And it has to be our priority. As a borough defined as a second-class borough, it is outlined as one of our major priorities. So realizing that we cut the school district by the amount of money that we cut the school district by, that results in cuts in staff, personnel, materials, supplies, resources that are needed for the education of our youth. The needs of the students in our community have changed drastically in the last 24 years. They're going to continue to change as society changes.
Incumbent Skinner and Kavanaugh expressed concern about the borough's bond debt affecting education appropriations. Skinner said the state's budget in terms of funding public education needs to be stabilized. Stability was a metaphor used by the incumbents as they declared their support for stable tax rates, stable state budget, and stable and predictable revenue. Challengers to their seats emphasized the value of communication and their dedication to improving Kodiak's quality of life. For KMXT News in Kodiak, I'm Jared Griffin.
The candidates also discussed how they would prioritize nonprofit support, village cooperation in borough decisions, community response to COVID-19, and conflict of interest matters. KMXT will have a recap of the candidates' take on these topics in part two tomorrow. And remember, you can listen to the full recording of the forum on kmxt.org. The weekly Kodiak Tsunami Warning Drill will take place this afternoon at 2, as it always does, but with one difference. Some neighborhoods will get to hear a test of the new siren. Here's what that sounds like. Okay, that should do the trick. The drill will begin with a test of the current system for about 30 seconds, followed by a test of the new sirens at 5 locations. Those locations are Armstrong at the baseball field, Jack Hinkle, Gibson Cove, the Kodiak Fire Department, and at the Civil Air Patrol. The Kodiak Police Department says it will have staffers on location to monitor the new sirens. The separate test will give them a chance to make sure they're functioning properly. The department says if there were to be an actual tsunami before the system is completely online, the community would hear both the old and new systems. The department hopes that the tests will also give the community a chance to recognize the warning sound. Some have told the police that the new warning siren sounds like a doorbell. Kodiak can look forward to the return of cruise ships in 2021. While the recently published schedule is still extremely tentative in the context of the global pandemic, cruise ships may reach the dock of Kodiak as early as May 1st this upcoming year. Many small businesses downtown and around the island benefit from tourism that the ships provide. For them, it would be the first time seeing this business from a cruise ship visitor since 2019. Only 15 cruise ships are presently scheduled in Kodiak, which is low compared to previous years. That number could change drastically as the outlook for COVID-19 pandemic and present economic downturn either worsens or improves. For subsistence hunters in the northern parts of Alaska, the bowhead whale has been a part of their diet for generations. However, scientists have found that as sea ice has dwindled in the Arctic waters, a new predator has moved in to feed on the marine mammals, killer whales. For Alaska's Energy Desk, Wesley Early has more on what that might mean for subsistence hunters.
It's not unheard of for killer whales to feed on bowhead whales in subarctic waters. Amy Willoughby is a researcher with the University of Washington, specializing in aerial surveys of Arctic marine mammals.
Killer whale predation on western Arctic bowhead whales has been documented in the shores of Russia and the Bering Sea, for example, the St. Lawrence Island.
However, in the colder waters north of Alaska, like the eastern Chukchi and western Beaufort Seas, sea ice becomes more plentiful, and it was thought that bowhead whales were better protected from predators. But Willoughby says that sea ice has gotten thinner as Arctic temperatures have risen in recent decades.
Bowhead whales are thought to have an avoidance strategy to predation by evading predation and hiding out in thicker sea ice. And without that sea ice there, bowhead whales don't have anywhere to retreat to.
Willoughby says scientists documented the first direct evidence of killer whale predation in those traditionally sea ice-rich waters in 2015.
The mouth was missing, the tongue was missing, the jaw was broken, and it also had healed rake marks on its flipper. And that was kind of the aha moment when we realized that killer whales might be predating on bowhead whales.
Researchers began examining bowhead whale carcasses found from 2009 to 2018. Of the 33 whales observed by scientists, 18 of them had evidence of killer whale predation.
We can't technically say that there's been an increase because there can be a lapse of data and information from years prior. But when we look at the years from 2009 to 2018, killer whales are the primary cause of death.
Willoughby says scientists don't know for sure what the long-term effects of killer whale predation on bowhead whales could be, but she speculates bowhead whales may change their migration patterns in response to predation. Additionally, their feeding opportunities could change as a result of killer whales moving in. That could have repercussions on the 11 Inupiat whaling communities that subsist on bowhead whales.
The indigenous people that hunt these whales for subsistence have hundreds of years of traditional ecological knowledge to base their efforts off of, and killer whale presence might negate that knowledge that they hold.
At the very least, she says it's now more important than ever for scientists to continue to keep an eye on killer whales as they expand their hunting grounds into the coldest parts of the world. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Wesley Early in Kotzebue.
U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell says she will support a bill to block a permit for the proposed pebble mine in southwest Alaska. The Alaska State Democrat is also calling for an investigation into whether Pebble's CEO lied to Congress about the project. Cantwell's announcement on Tuesday is more fallout from the undercover operation an environmental group ran that targeted Pebble executives. Pebble CEO Tom Collier resigned last week after the group released tapes of Collier and of the CEO of Pebble's parent company bragging about their political pull to men they thought were investors. The executives also spoke of the mine as a 200-year project. Pebble's permit application is for 20 years. Cantwell wants the Justice Department to investigate whether Collier committed perjury when he told a House committee last year that, quote, Pebble has no current plans in this application or in any other way for expansion, unquote. Collier and other Pebble representatives have said any future expansion would require new permits, which Collier also said in the secretly recorded tapes. If the Corps of Engineers issues a wetlands permit, Pebble would be built on state land that is upstream from Bristol Bay. The mine proposal is extremely unpopular among commercial fishermen of Bristol Bay, including many who are Cantwell's constituents. The Coast Guard Air Station on Kodiak Island has reported its first two cases of COVID-19. Two staffers were notified of their exposure to the coronavirus yesterday, that is Monday, and they have been isolated. Petty Officer First Class Ali Blackburn says contact tracing is underway to determine the source of infection and to isolate others who have been exposed to the virus. Based on the investigation so far, she says the two cases do not appear to be travel-related.
Both of our Coast Guard members did not recently deploy, so they did not travel off-island.
The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization reported two new cases of COVID-19 on Tuesday, bringing the total number of cases reported in the Kodiak area to 76. In a news release, it said one case was travel-related and the second person was a close contact of the first. It also reported three active cases in the region. Elsa DeHart, a state public health nurse who has served as spokesperson for the group, confirmed that the two new cases it reported on Tuesday involved Coast Guard members and said in a text that the Coast Guard has done the full investigation, so its information about the source of transmission is more current. She said state health officials initially believed the cases were travel-related. The Coast Guard says Kodiak Air Station is completely operational, but only essential personnel are working on location.
All the other personnel are remaining at home at this time while the spaces at the air station are being cleaned and disinfected.
Blackburn says the Coast Guard is taking every precaution to prevent the spread of the virus to the community of Kodiak and is following state and CDC guidelines.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. The annual Pacific Halibut Survey was a big success. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
Resounding success is how scientists summed up this summer's Pacific Halibut Survey, despite it being shortened and scaled down a bit due to the COVID pandemic. The so-called Fishery Independent Setline Survey uses standardized methods to track trends in the halibut stock, which ranges from the West Coast and British Columbia to the far reaches of the Bering Sea. This summer, 11 longline vessels took halibut scientists aboard for 2 months to fish at 898 survey stations, down 30%. The foregone areas were waters off California, Oregon, and Washington. For Alaska, survey areas in the Bering Sea near the Pribilofs were cut, along with stations at the Aleutian Islands near Unalaska and Adak.
We also thinned out a little bit in 3B and then also the stations off Vancouver Island.
David Wilson is director of the International Pacific Halibut Commission. He says roughly 70% of the Pacific halibut biomass overall was sampled and 100% in the core areas of the Central Gulf, Southeast, and Northern British Columbia.
Normally we would have done a thinner sampling in those areas, but to ensure we had enough samples coming out, we went for 100% of those core areas, which is why we've produced an incredibly rich data set for 2020.
More survey findings and a first glimpse at how the halibut stocks are holding up will be unveiled at the IPHC interim meeting set for November 18th and 19th. Wilson says the meetings will be held online. Halibut catch limits and other regulations are revealed at the annual meetings in late January. The Pacific stock has been declining. Alaska's commercial halibut catch for this year was about 17 million pounds. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMC instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 42, date issued 10 a.m. on September 28th. There will be a 72-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, September 29th, to 6 p.m. Friday, October 2nd, in the following areas. In the Outer Iqaluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Afognak District, except for the Outer Katoy Bay and Izuit Bay sections remain open until further notice, and the Inner Katoy Bay section remains closed. The Mainland District, the Sheratine Bay, Anton Larsen Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spiridon Bay, Zacher Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Eastside Kodiak District, and the Northeast Kodiak District. as previously announced. Following areas remain open until further notice: the Outer Katoy Bay and Iziut Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, and the Humpy Dead Man, Cape Alitak, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. Until further notice, in that portion of the Northwest and Southwest Kodiak District, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliuk, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse-seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area. Salmon statistical chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record of phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 30th and last day of September, the year 2020. The sun rose today at 8:11. It won't set again until 7:47 this evening. That is going to give us 11 hours and 31 minutes, a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. At 2:18 this afternoon, we will have a high tide on the east side. That's going to be an 8.2-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 8:13 p.m. of a 1-foot low tide. Your high tide for 2:19 in the morning will be at 8.5-foot tide. And tomorrow morning's low tide at 8:29 a.m. will be 0.4 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a high tide coming up at 2:44 this afternoon. That's going to be a 15.2-foot tide. Your low tide this evening will be at 8:48 p.m., 0.6 feet. Your high tide in the wee hours will be at 2:49 a.m., 15.1 feet. And your low tide on the west side tomorrow morning will be at 9:03 a.m., 0.1 foot tide. 53 degrees here in beautiful downtown Kodiak. We're looking for rain for the rest of the afternoon, possibly heavy at times, a high near 51, so we've already broken that. It does seem very warm out there for some reason. Look for more rain tonight, low around 48, southeast winds to 35 miles per hour tonight. And for tomorrow, heavy rain, high near 50, southeast winds increasing to 35 miles per hour tomorrow as well. Your chance of precipitation tomorrow, 110%. Rain for the rest of the week too, it looks like. Mariners, be aware, we have gale warnings all around the Gulf of Alaska, including Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. We have a gale warning through Thursday. East wind to 40 knots right now. Will come down to southeast 30 this afternoon, but look for them to come up to southeast 35 tonight. Seas building to 19 feet tonight. And for Thursday, we're looking at southeast winds becoming east 45 knots on Thursday afternoon, seas to 18 feet. Thursday night, we're looking for east winds to 55 knots and seas building to 24 feet, 25-foot seas on Friday. Over in the Shelikof, gale warning today and Thursday, northeast wind to 40 knots on Kodiak's west side right now, and seas to 18 feet. For tomorrow, look for southeast wind to 25 knots, becoming northeast 40 tomorrow afternoon. Seas to 8 feet will build to 16 feet tomorrow afternoon. For Thursday night, look for northeast winds to 55 knots in the Shelikof, seas building to 27 feet. For Friday, look for seas to come down to 11 feet seas, but the winds to remain at southeast 40. So that's some weather. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will hold a meeting next Tuesday. That meeting will begin at 12 p.m. at the Baranoff Park Meeting Room. The meeting is open to the public, and for more information, call the Parks and Rec office at 486-8670. Well, Election Day is Tuesday, October 6th, but you could be voting right now. Early voting has been made available by the Kodiak Island Borough in the Borough Assembly Chambers from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. every single weekday until Election Day. And remember, when you early vote in person, your vote is counted the day of the election. If you absentee vote in person, it's counted 7 days later.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.